8874. The date is Tuesday, July the 28th, 2026, assuming you're listening to this the day it was published, or live if you're sitting with me right now in the video area. Hey, if you're like, hey man, I'd love to catch one of these live streams that Jack does, all you got to do is go to TSPC Live and you will generally find the next coming episode that will be live the day that the episode goes. I usually publish it a couple hours before that episode, or you might see the one from the last one. You want to make sure you never miss it. Join our Telegram channel. You don't have to get on the group where everybody's chatting back and forth. You can get on the channel. Go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on Get Social. You'll see all the ways to connect. But if you use Telegram, it's a guaranteed way. I never do a live without usually about 2 hours before it goes live, putting out a link and a notice, hey, this is what we're talking about today, this is what time, and here's the different places you can go listen to it. So, hey, what are we talking about today? We're talking about 18 delicious animals that people throw away. People say you can't eat them, and everybody knows they're terrible. We're talking about things like the dreaded saltwater catfish. And then some people are like, you could eat the gaff tops, but not the hardheads. They taste exactly the same. We're going to talk about that. Freshwater drum, feral hogs, raccoon, beavers. All these muskrats, things that I used to eat when I was a young guy, and my family was actually pretty poor, and we used to trap fur for money. And you just didn't throw away meat back then. We're going to talk about all that stuff. A lot of fish. Fish seem to suffer from this more than mammals and birds do, though we do have some mammals and some birds today, again, like feral hogs, pigeons. People sit around eating doves and say you can't eat a pigeon when they're all pigeons or doves. They're all the same thing, really, just different sizes and shapes and colors. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about some ways to cook some of this stuff. No deep recipes or anything like that today. Maybe we'll do a follow-up show with like 10 recipes that are really, really cool with some of the stuff. Maybe I'll get Chef Ken on and we'll talk about that in a future show. But just basically, like, is the myth true at all that it's not good to eat? Is there something you can do to change the myth? Is the myth based on fact or a total pure fiction? And if there's some things you need to do or certain ways that you need to handle processing or slaughter or something like that, what are those things? And then we can eat all this wonderful food. And there's a bunch of reasons that we want to do that. And there's a big reason this is a survival topic. More on that in just a minute. I do expect some angry wailing and gnashing of teeth in the live stream comments today. I'll almost be disappointed if nobody does it. If nobody's like, you don't know, I tried to eat one of those one time and my face fell off or some stupid shit, right? Don't do it just to please me, though. Don't play devil's advocate. But I will be shocked if that doesn't happen. I'm pretty sure after this is published, I'll get some hate mails about how I don't know what I'm talking about. Here's the thing. I put a hard restriction on this show today. One absolute hard restriction that no matter what I thought, the thing didn't get in the list unless this one thing was true. I have personally eaten it. If I have not personally eaten it, even if I believe the people telling me it's good, I did not put it in the list. An example would be the snakehead, right? This is a fish, looks similar to our native species, the bowfin, but it's a very different animal, invasive species. It's a problem. I have no reason to doubt the snakehead is delicious, but I wouldn't put it on my list because I never ate it. I'm happy to, but that's the threshold here. Unless I've eaten it myself, unless I've processed it myself, honestly, because every one of these I have not only eaten, I have personally either caught or shot, and then I have personally taken a knife to it, and then I have personally parted it out in some way, and then I have personally cooked it, and then I have personally eaten it, and then I said, eaten it, and then said, gee, that was actually really good. So that's what happens. It, you know, Art by Lee Murphy says, edible and nutritious doesn't always equal tasty, but that's my other thing. It had to be good. And not like, yeah, I could eat it. It had to be good, good. So we're going to talk about all of it today. But we do that. Let's go ahead and I got a bunch of announcements for you today. We're not even going to have an official sponsor segment because of that today, but we kind of sort of do right here out of the gate. although not a sponsor. New member of the MSB BattleBox has been added to the MSB. If you're an MSB member, all you got to do is log into the benefits section of the, or log into the MSB, go to the benefits section. It'll be in the featured and new vendors, and you can just click a link there, and you will get 30% off your first order. And you can decide if you like it, if you want to keep it or not, or you can cancel. BattleBox has different levels. They have a really inexpensive box, a couple little small things, medium, a little bit bigger, and like a mega box, right, for the true gearhead. And some really, really cool stuff you get in your BattleBox. I will say, I'm not putting any women down or anything here. I'm just saying this is kind of more of a guy thing than a chick thing on this one. I'm sure some, they have some female customers that love it, but it's kind of guy gadget stuff. Really cool optics, cases, fire starting equipment, EDC gear, all kinds of cool stuff. You can check them out. Again, BattleBox, and it's spelled BattleBox, one word, if you haven't ever heard of these guys. They've been around a long time. This is actually a LinkedIn success story. With some of the things I'm doing with jackslaws.com, I've become active on LinkedIn after like 15 years of not even going to the site. And I have picked up quite a few things off LinkedIn. One of the interviews I did recently came from LinkedIn. One of the interviews I'll probably be doing next month came from LinkedIn. An interview I'm going to be on somebody else's show for the books, that came from LinkedIn. So LinkedIn's actually useful. Despite some other things. And I connected with the CEO of BattleBox on LinkedIn, hit him up by DM, and within an hour I had this deal done. So check him out again today, BattleBox added to the MSB. Next up, I have a quick announcement about a problem was brought to my attention, and I fully understand the problem now, and I'm going to try to explain it as best I can as shortly as possible, because I'm sure most of you tuned in to hear about 18 animals that are delicious. Anyway, my book, the second edition of the first book, and of course I have the wrong book up on the screen right now because I do, so I'm just going to get rid of that and explain to you what's going on and tell you what to do. The first edition of the book had problems. I fixed those and I added about 20,000 words of copy. I did everything Amazon said to do so that they would keep my reviews. And that they would move my reviews. And they promised to do that. And I made some decisions because of what Amazon said to me. Some was improper, just mistakes. And some were outright freaking lies. I've caught them in several lies here of what they said to me and commitments they made to me that they then later said, well, we can't do it. Well, that means you lied when you said you were going to do it, right? Because you can't do it. In any event, what happens if you go to the second edition of the first book? If you want to buy the hard copy, the Kindle, or the audio, you get the second edition. As soon as you switch to soft copy, it goes to the first edition. And they gave me a long, lengthy explanation I won't burden you with today, okay? But it's basically, it's selling signals higher, and the two books are linked. Now, I said, just get rid of it. Delist it. And they're like, you'll lose your all your reviews you were concerned about. I'm like, I don't give a shit anymore. I don't care. I can get more reviews. Take it away. Stop fucking over my people. You're screwing my people over, and they're your customers too. And they said, we can't do anything. I believe that to be bullshit. I guarantee you if the federal government sent them a piece of paper and said, remove the first edition of this book, it's dangerous, they'd have it done in 5 fucking minutes. They won't do it. They won't take it away. What I did, I went in and I edited it and said, don't buy it. And I put a link in it that you can copy and paste and go to the right one. They promised to put a link in it that would take you there. They didn't do it. They said they're doing it, but they didn't do it. It's been 3 days since they said they're doing it, and they're not doing it. I've done everything I can. All I can tell you is this. If you go to my site first, and you click on the link for the paperback in the listing or in today's show notes, I'm going to do some things to help you be able to do that more in the future, you can buy the soft copy in the second edition. It does exist. It is weird as shit. You're sitting on the main listing. You click on hard copy, there it is. You switch to soft copy, it changes. And they're liars and they're unhelpful. And they won't fix the problem they created. They said now that they're linked to share the reviews, it's impossible. Right? If you know anything about databases, you know this is ridiculous. It's impossible to delete the first edition. This is bullshit. So I've done what I can for now. I'll explain more tomorrow. I don't want to belabor this since I screwed up and I have the wrong damn one on the screen. Next up, just a real quick reminder. We are launching the new edition or the next round of the ChatGPT course for entrepreneurs. That will be launched the last week of August. The only way you're going to have a chance to even get into this class is to go to jackslaws.com right now and fill out the pre-registration form, and then you'll get emails as we come up to the class, like a week out, hey, it's a week away, a couple days out, hey, it's a couple days away, and then the morning of, we'll send you a link and say, it's a race. And so you'll be fully informed, you'll have a shot. We have over 700 people pre-registered, and some ass clown registered, like, I don't know if it was to be a spamming asshole or just to think he had ways to get in. Somebody registered like 20 accounts that were all really the same person with different fictitious emails. Yeah, those are all deleted. Don't do that shit. I pay attention to my database. I will purge you. And I can find your IP and I can block you from the entire server if you keep your shit up. So just saying that. But if you want to get in that course, that's going to be your only way to get into the course. And with that, let's get into these animals that I have for you today and what we could do with them. I want to start off with, why do people think you can't eat certain things? Why do you think people say they taste terrible if they don't? Why does everybody vegan, go vegan for the win? Yeah, I'd rather like just kill myself than go vegan. I'm sorry, dude. If you're here to be a sniper, this vegan guy, don't, because you're not going to have a good time, right? Like in South Park with the ski instructors, you're going to have a bad time if you try that. Anyway, why do people think you can't eat these things? Well, why do they think that they taste terrible? I think there's actually three primary reasons. And reason one is we are a spoiled society. We eat better than kings ate 300 years ago. Those of us who live in the Western world and have even a modest income can gain access to food that a king not so long ago could even get the type of food. The fact that we have people like, I don't eat dark meat, chicken. I only eat the white meat, right? The fact that that's a thing, right? The fact that that's a thing, it tells you everything you need to know. Right there. And the vegan guy said he's not a hater. Good. Okay, fine. We'll see. I just have a poor experience when they show up to shows like this. Anyway, so I think people are spoiled. It's just too easy to be picky, right? If you go back 50 years, you couldn't be this picky. If you go back 100, you starve, okay? Number two is that everyone knows is a version, like an adult version of the childhood game telephone. So if you don't remember what telephone was because you're not Gen X or older and you had video games your whole life, we used to play this game where we sat around in a circle, okay, and the first person would like turn to their right and whisper something in the ear to the first person. And then they would all pass it around and everybody's supposed to do their best to say exactly what they were told. And maybe it goes around 12 kids. And by the old joke was purple monkey dishwasher. So you start out with something like Christy likes Susie or whatever. Christy likes, yeah, I guess that would be today, right? Christy likes Tommy. And by the time it came back around, it was purple monkey dishwasher. It had nothing to do with how it started out. But only the person who started it really knew what was said and what was true. And it kind of morphed across time. But it got repeated, yeah? And a way that this often happens is that, let's say a dad is out fishing with a kid, and they fish all day and they catch like one catfish, one bullhead catfish. And the kid's like, Daddy, can we take it home and eat it? And dad's like, you know, they're not really good to eat. Now, dad may believe that, or he may just not want to clean one slimy fish that day. Or this guy may have never cleaned a fish in his life and doesn't want to tell his kid. He doesn't know how. And so he tells the kid that. The kid grows up and tells his kids that, who tell their kids that. We trust our parents. And then this just spreads through society. Now you add the internet and Instafluencers and all that, and it just magnifies its effect across time. Or, you know, guy takes his nephew hunting. They're out in a dove field. There's pigeons. The guy doesn't really want to deal with pigeons. The kid says, hey, can we shoot the pigeons? And he goes, you can, but they're not good to eat. Meanwhile, in France, there's a 3-star Michelin restaurant putting a squab, which is a young pigeon, and somebody in front of somebody for, you know, $80 for that plate or more. and you have to wait for a month to get a reservation to go eat that squab. It is just a matter of I heard a thing, I repeated a thing, and if you repeat a thing long enough, then everybody knows the thing is true, and no one, right, no one, you aggravated them, dude, they're going to mess with you now because you responded. If you stop reacting, they'll stop picking. This is like school, dude. I'm talking to the vegan guy, right? Like, the more you react, the more they're going to attack, right? It's not, leave this guy alone. He's not causing any problems. Leave him alone, guys. All right. So, that's one source. And then the last one is, some of them do require a little extra care, right? And sometimes that extra care isn't even that big of a, it's just cooking it right. Here's an example of a thing that most people do know is good to eat. And a person in my life who I love dearly, my wife, swore I don't like it. So I remember when, bro, you don't have to tell me you're cool. I know you're cool. I just stuck up for you. Relax. Chill. It's fine. I'm going to ban him because he's going to be distracting, even though he's being nice. Anyway, it's cool. You're fine, bro. Anyway, my wife, I remember when we first started going out and, you know, we started to get serious. And, you know, I go hunting and I'm like, I'll cook some venison for you. I don't like deer meat. When did you have it? Well, her ex-husband had cooked it, right? And I'm like, okay, fine. What did it taste like? She goes, it reminded me of liver. So then you don't dislike deer meat. You dislike deer meat that somebody overcooked and ruined because they don't understand how to cook venison. And you can't sit here and tell me you'll eat a ribeye and you won't eat a freaking piece of backstrap. Because the flavor's different, but it's more the same than different. And it turned out when somebody actually cooked a piece of deer meat properly, little pink left in it. We don't dry it out. We don't turn it into mush. Deer meat's delicious, right? The same thing can be true of something everybody knows is just bad, and it can all start with not understanding certain things. You can't cook a very lean protein like venison the way you cook a very fatty cut like a ribeye because you don't have the fat as an insulator. It's also a smaller piece of meat, the overall size of the cut. So it's easier to dry out because you have less volume when you put it on a grill. There's a lot of other things, like shark is a perfect example. We'll get to that, so I won't jump ahead. All right. And then the last thing is why I think this topic's important before we get into the individual animals. And number one is I think that we should all be building a better life. And part of building a better life is saving more wealth and investing more wealth so that it can be leveraged into investments and do more for us as we age. And the more money we have, it's, you know, life is like a shit sandwich since we're talking about food today, and that means the more bread we have, the less shit we have to eat. If you can eat 10% of your meals for free, even just 10%, it is a massive differential across a lifetime into your retirement alone. So money is one topic in of itself. And if we ever have to live off the land, we can learn from this. Like my granddad's squirrel traps. Now, squirrel's not on the list. I think most people understand, even if they don't want to eat a squirrel, that squirrel didn't taste bad, and it doesn't. If you like rabbit, you like squirrel. And if you like chicken, you like squirrel and rabbit. They don't taste the same, but they're close enough that you would eat them all and you wouldn't really notice the difference. But my granddad, when I was a kid, I was out going through all this stuff out in his shed, and I find these huge, heavy-duty, like made with pieces of oak rat traps. They're like, in my little hand, I had to pull to get these things back. And it was like a freaking 110 caliber, the snap on them. And that's just how they made rat traps back in the 30s. So I remember saying to my, but all of them had a hole drilled in them. So I take one of these rat traps to my granddad and said, Granddad, what's this? He goes, that's a squirrel trap. I said, I thought it was a rat trap. He goes, it is, but the hole is for squirrels. And I'm like, well, how'd that work? He said, well, what we do during the Depression, when food was tight, you take the trap and you put a screw through that hole and you screw it to the side of a tree. That kept it away from other things you didn't want to get in it. You bait it with a little bit of peanut butter, and the squirrel comes up or down the tree and gets killed in the trap, and then you have a squirrel. And I said, well, did they work? He goes, they worked really good for about 2 years. Because when everybody started using them, the squirrel population went down. Now, that was real hard times. That is not some made-up, fictitious, apocalyptic movie of a fantasy world where certain members of our community get all excited and do things to themselves watching Red Dawn. That is the real world. And if we ever get into a position where that has to happen again, the more that you know you can use, the more resiliency you have, okay? And the other side of this is I just don't think that life should be wasted. So I don't really care the person that says, this thing's bad to eat, so I'm not going to harvest it or kill it. That's fine. We all eat what we like. Some people don't like a freaking tomato, right? So, yeah, some people don't like a tomato, but they like salsa made out of tomatoes. I don't know. It is what it is. And that's how some of this is, too. You prepare it differently, maybe you'll like it. But the people that, for instance, catch a gar, call it a trash fish, throw it up in the woods and let it rot, that sickens me. Either don't harvest it or do something with it, you know? Now, if you are dealing with an actual overpopulation problem, I understand. But then you should still see if there's a way the product can be utilized, all right? And some of these do need protection in the long run. And I think we protect what we value. We actually don't have, especially in the Western world, right? We don't have anything that people highly value as game or food that's endangered. Unless it was already endangered before we put protections on it. In other words, when you look at things that people really do like to harvest for food, there's always bag limits, et cetera. And there is a certain mindset that the last thing I would do is kill that thing and let it rot because we value it. So the more we value these animals, the more we will realize that they're an important part of our ecosystems, that we do need them. And they're not some. There's no such thing as a trash fish. That's not a thing. That fish serves a purpose in its environment. It should be banished. Right? Because you don't eat it does not make it trash. There is no animal, unless we put it somewhere it doesn't belong, and there's actually at least one on this list that we've done that with, but there is no animal that doesn't belong in its environment where it evolved. Who are you to say it's trash? So to me, we solve two problems there. By eating it, we actually value it, and we will actually protect it at a higher level than viewing it as trash to be discarded. Because to me, that's if you kill something with no reason, that's where me and our vegan friend here probably agree. I consider that, and I don't mean in a religious sense, but true to the word, a sin. To kill for no purpose is murder, no matter what the creature is. It's to kill for your own amusement. To me, it's a vile piece of our humanity. Anyway, well, so what are we going to start off with? The bullhead catfish. There is no animal with more bullshit said about it as a food item than the bullhead catfish. And I've heard it all. Well, they're okay when the water's really cockroaches. Now, you know what? Cockroaches count as being not trash when they're not in my home. If they live in their natural environment, which is not a house, then they're fine. And they don't cause any problems. All right. So moving on. Bullhead catfish is more bullshit around. I've heard it all. They eat mud. No, they don't. You can't live on mud. All they eat is dead stuff off the bottom. Have you ever snorkeled or scuba dived in a lake? Do you ever look at the bottom? Is there tons of pollution, trash, and dead shit down there? Do you know how big a school of these things can be? Like when you're on them, like it's left and right, left and right, left and right, left and right. I've seen, you know, the underwater GoPros people put on their lines, and you see just massive. There's not enough stuff laying dead and rotten and stinking on the bottom of a pond for these things to survive. They're predators. They eat the same shit a bass does. Just because they'll eat a piece of hot dog or something you throw out on the bottom doesn't mean that their main diet is not as a predator. You want to see what a predator they are? Do what I've done. See, you learn things when you observe things. I put bullheads in a fish tank. Do you know my favorite thing to do when I was just growing some to see how fast they grow and how they act and what they're really like? You go down to a pond, take a dip net, catch a whole bunch of minnows, and throw those minnows in there, and you watch what happens. You literally hear bloop, bloop, bloop. So what? They eat minnows in my fish tank, but they don't eat them in the. It's retarded. I've heard if the water's cold, they're good. If the water's too warm, they're not. There's a density of flesh issue there. They do have a little bit denser flesh, but all fish benefit from the solution there. Salt. A little bit of salt. Put it on the fillets or on the prepared fish before you cook it. Pull some of the water out of it. Firm it up. That's it. That's all you got to do. The big reason, though, I think that bullheads get a bad rap, because they used to be a highly dependent on food fish up until about the 1950s. If you want to really dig into this, Google the bullhead wars. It's a fascinating story. But there's still places where during bullhead season, you go to restaurants and you get like two bullheads and some hush puppies and stuff like that. They're just catfish. But they have, the reason they call them a bullhead, right? They have a giant head, and their head's about half the length of their body. So like a 10, 12-inch bullhead is like, you get that much of a fillet off of it. And it just doesn't feel worth it, I think is where this all started. Well, there's a technique called shucking. I'm not going to pull it up today. I don't want to make the show too long. But basically, you go into the caudal fin tab on the back, and you take a knife and you cut up to the spine. You go in and break the backbone, and you crack the fish. You grab the spine. Pliers are really beneficial to this, and you pull. And in one hand, you have head, skin, and guts. And the other hand, you have a skinned, bone-in, flesh-on, perfect little fish to fry. It takes 30 to 45 seconds. You can do it in about 20 when you get good at it. It'll take you a while that when you make that cut, you don't dig into the skin on the sides and it pulls in a single piece. Otherwise, you get the pliers and yank the little bits off. Cooking it couldn't be easier. Take a knife, cut three little slits on both sides. Bullhead's a fatty catfish. It'll let some of the fat out. And either pan fry it in butter, just salt and pepper, give it a little roll in cornmeal or flour, same thing, or throw it on the grill. Fantastic. And the bones will hold together. You literally pick it up and eat it like a piece of chicken. And pull the meat off the bones that way. Then the saltwater catfish, which is both the hardhead and gaff top sale. Just whatever you would do with a channel cat, that's what you do. That's the whole thing. There is nothing special that needs to be done with them. They don't need to be bled out. You don't need to worry about their bloodline. They're a catfish. I have cooked four people when we go surf fishing, and I have made four or five different fish at the same time and done it like a flight. And universally, with very few exceptions, sitting next to very high-quality fish that is sold commercially, like pompano, universally, the saltwater catfish has either been the favorite or has been at the top of everybody's list of their favorites. Like, if it isn't one, it's number two for people. My wife, who is very picky, prefers saltwater catfish over mahi. Yes, mahi. Very expensive fish. Very expensive. Okay? I'm just saying, they eat their own shit. They eat mud. An animal can't live that way. Do you know what entropy is? Right? When you go scuba diving, if you've ever been scuba diving or snorkeling out in the ocean, how much is there on the bottom? And you talk about the school size of bullheads. These things? You're talking a school could come through millions of these animals. There's not enough shit laying dead for them to eat. They're predators. Anybody that's ever done a lot of fishing in saltwater areas has caught these things on lures. So you know that they're predators. Just because they will eat on the bottom doesn't mean that they eat shit. You know what else eats on the bottom? Redfish, red drum, love to eat on the bottom. It's one of their mouths on the bottom. And they're in high-end restaurants. Now, I think a redfish is a better eating fish. I'll be honest with you. But they're both really, really good. By the way, the redfish was a trash fish until Paul Prudhomme came along. Now we have to have stamps and limits and stuff like that on them because they were hit so hard after he just showed people how to cook them with blackening seasonings. Next up is another fish. I got a lot of fish on this list. And this is one that I don't even know where the bullshit comes from about it. The freshwater drum. The freshwater drum, there is nothing you need to do with a freshwater drum to make it delicious to eat. And if I had to put my finger on what other freshwater fish it was most like, I would say striped bass. From a texture and flavor standpoint, it looks a little different, but it's a firm-fleshed fish. It cooks beautifully. All you do is fillet it. That's all you have to do. There is no reason to believe that they're a bad-eating fish. They are not a scavenger. They are absolutely a predator. I have caught them many times when fishing for white bass and stripers. on vertical jigging slabs. Anything that hits a vertical jigging slab is trying to eat a shad or a bait fish that's dying. That's what it imitates, okay? They eat a lot of, like, freshwater mussels and things like that. That's what that mouth is for. It is for eating other living creatures. It is not for eating garbage. Again, how much garbage do you think there is in these lakes and stuff for these fish to eat that's edible? Not just like, I'm not talking about toxins at all. And if anybody brings that up, if you're like, but they accumulate these, you know, bad toxins, or don't eat fish out of dirty water. That's in it. We're talking about fish out of clean water here, right? The freshwater drill is a delicious fish, and you don't need to do anything special at all, other than, I'm going to say this for all fish. A fish, when you catch it, you should either kill it, ice it, or it needs to be in a live well or like a holding basket in fresh moving water, right? The fish should not lay dead for any length of time in any way unless it is ice freaking cold. That will make everything better, okay? Next up, the feral hog. Boy, did I start a shitstorm over this one. About 2 months ago, my grandkids and I and my wife went for a hike in a nature center, and we were on the way back, and my grandson goes, there's a big pig there dead on the side of the road. So I go all the way back around. I don't see it. This kid's got some eyes. He's going to be all right in the bush, man. It was way back off the road. Like, somebody had brought this animal here, and definitely somebody had killed it and taken pictures of it, loaded it in a truck, drove it out on the side of the road, and drove they probably drove the truck back there because there were no drag marks, and dumped this thing to let it rot in the sun. And it was way past where I would have picked it up. It had been shot under the eye. It was fully intentional. How do I know they photographed it before they dumped it? Because they had a stick in its mouth to hold it up so you could see the tusks. This animal was probably 300 pounds, and it was a boar. And I posted this picture. This is such a waste. If you're going to kill something, eat it. And if you don't want it, before you drag it out in the middle of nowhere and dump it, see if anybody wants it. Because somebody might want it. And, oh, I got all the people that know everything. You can't eat them. They're too tough. Wrong. They taste like shit. Wrong. They're inedible. Wrong. They're full of worms. Wrong. They have a parasite risk. So does domestic pigs. That's why we cook it to the temperature we do. Right? They can have diseases. So can domestic pigs. That's why we don't eat something that shows obvious sign of disease. That's why we look at a liver before we process the rest of the animal. Nothing you're saying has anything to do with anything that's not true about pigs. These same people are going out and buying expensive pastured pork, by the way, which is our attempt to replicate this feral animal. Here's the thing about pigs, and I know people are going to get upset when I say this. They're just pigs. They're just pork. Big boars do excrete a lot of, like, a stinky, nasty thing. So the outside of the animal stinks. Processing especially mature boars requires what I call knife discipline. And that means that as we open up the skin on that animal, we are not letting the secretions on the outside of the skin get into the meat. Right? So that means that when we, like, open up the legs, we either wash the knife before we start peeling, or we switch to a different blade. That's all you got to do. That's it. Now, can you have a really old, super rank boar? Sure. This is the exception, not the rule. And most of the pigs that are harvested are 200 pounds and under. And boar or sow, they're fine. By the way, it's funny. Well, the boars, and then the sows, well, the big sow, that's fine. They both stink the same on the outside, really. Now, there is a thing called boar taint, and this is a thing that pops up even in domestic swine. In fact, if you are eating factory pork, if it comes from a boar, there's literally a guy at the horrific CAFO these pigs live in, where they're in these little cages they can't even turn around in, that walks around on a certain schedule and injects these boars with a thing that prevents the boar taint, okay? And you can tell me, no, they castrate them, whatever. I can tell you that whether they castrate them or not, the gentleman that walks around and injects these pigs so that they don't have boar taint exists. Because I know one of them. In real life, in person, it's his job. So don't tell me it doesn't exist. The the thing here is it's kind of like a cilantro thing in a different way. Like half of people think it's the best thing in the world and half other people taste like feet. There are people that can detect it and people that can't. And if you can detect it and you honestly don't like it and you've honestly tried it, fine. But what I find universally, everybody that says this, when you really push them, have you ever tried it? No. But my uncle's former cousin's roommate did, and he said it's bad, right? Or everybody knows. I'm sorry, it's just pork. Knife discipline, proper processing. Yes, if you shoot a pig and it's 95 degrees out and you throw it in the back of your truck and you drive around with it for another 4 freaking hours looking for another pig before you take it back and process it, it starts to go off. It's ungutted, first of all. So all the body heat is like, you have to process animals properly. Pigs are no different, all right? Art by Lee Murphy says, injecting puberty blockers in male pigs, what could possibly go wrong? They're not puberty blockers, though. I don't remember what it is. But it's probably not good for us, I'll say that. What I will tell you is even I've gotten some feral hog at times where not the best. It's not something I can't eat, but not the best. But when you cut it 50% with either a good fatty cut of beef or domestic pork, you make sausage out of it. You know, or I've often done, like, you shoot a pig and a deer on a single trip. I make sausage. And you would never know. Moving on, sharks. Oh, sharks. The mythology around what is necessary to cook shark meat and have it not taste bad is ridiculous. But it goes back to, again, processing. So there are three options that you can take with a shark that once you take those options, you don't have to do anything except cook it like you cook a piece of swordfish or a steak for that matter. Option one, the second that you decide that animal is for harvest, process it immediately. You know, kill it, fillet it, steak it out, whatever you're going to do. You know, depending on the size, you cut the fins off. If they're smaller, you really don't have to. But process it immediately. The second is to bleed it out. Cut the gills, and you cut the tail, and you bleed it out in the water. You get all the blood out of it. And number three is, if it's small enough and you have a large enough cooler and enough ice it. Now, this does not mean throw the shark on top of the ice. I mean, you freaking cover it with ice. Any one of those three, and all you have is beautiful, delicious steaks. That's what you get out of a shark. Any edible, well, they're all edible. Any shark that a person would regularly keep. I don't care if it's a black tip, a white tip, a spinner, a silky, a bull, a lemon, I don't care. They're all the same. You know, there's little differences in their flavor, but overall, that's all you got to do. Why do people believe that this is bad? This one's based on reality. Sharks excrete urea, piss, through their skin. That does not mean they constantly have like this flowing through their flesh. They don't. When they're healthy and alive, they have pathways that stuff takes, and it comes out of the flesh, or out of the skin as they need to admit it. Just like you have a bladder and you pee when you have to pee. Okay? It's not the same, but it's similar enough for that to be an analogy. When you take a shark out of the water and it begins to die, if it begins to die and it's not completely cold, what happens is everything in its guts begins to flow out through the flesh at once. And since it's dead, it can't actually get out, and it just kind of oozes to the outside. And it will literally smell like pee. Like if you pick it up, it'll smell like pee. If you let that happen. Okay. When you bleed it, that doesn't happen. You cut the gills and the tail, and the heart pumps the blood out. And so now it has nothing to circulate. It has no way to move that waste. The waste is gone, basically. Right? So after we bleed it, we gut it. Then we throw it in a cooler. Okay? We don't have enough ice to bury it. So why does burying it in ice work? When you completely bury it in ice, it dies a slow and, I would say, rather peaceful death because they do not have a prefrontal cortex. And it basically tries, the body goes into a biological process and it protects the core. And so all the stuff that would ooze out goes to the core to try to keep it warm and alive, and it dies and it stays in the guts. Okay? So this has to be a relatively decent sized shark, you know, like not too big to be able to do that to it. If you process it immediately, you should be able to figure out why that works. You don't need to soak it in milk. You don't need to soak it in Italian dressing. You don't need to, I don't know, draw a freaking pentagram and stick it in the middle and chant like witches or whatever else you think you need to do. That's all you need to do. And as I've said, everything on here I've eaten, and I've probably eaten shark more than just about anything on here. Every time we go to Florida, I take probably a shark a day or every other day off the beach because we catch about 3 foot, 2.5, 3 foot shark, black tip puffs. Right off the beach, I catch 20, 30 of them a day, and at least one of them will suck a hook, like where you the blood's coming out the gills. And all I do, I run up to the we have a little hut at our hotel, run up there with a fillet knife, immediately process it while it's, you know, before it's even dead. And my wife, again, my wife is picky. My wife loves it. Just one little 2.5, 3 foot black tip, we usually get two meals out of. We take like from the about where the butt is up, and we get off each side a nice steak, one for each of us. That's dinner. And then from that back down to that tail piece, that gets chunked up, and we make little shark bites out of them or something like that the next day. You either roll them in like Cajun blackening season and just blacken them in a pan, or when we're on vacation, I'll eat carbs. So we'll use there's a seasoning. I can't think of what it's called right now, but they sell it at Publix in Florida. And it's freaking Everglades is the brand name. It's freaking amazing. I've tried some of their other products, didn't like it, but just the fish fry is great. We'll roll them in that and deep fry them. Oh, my God, they're delicious. It's absolutely freaking amazing how good they are. But shark, when you grill it, it tastes kind of like a steak and a striped bass made a baby, right? They have the consistency and the juiciness of a steak, but they taste like a good quality piece of fish. But you don't need anything special. You just need to handle the animal right and handle the slaughter correctly. Groundhog. I grew up hunting groundhogs. And initially it wasn't for food. It's because groundhogs really are one of these animals that can be a problem for farmers, especially farmers that have cattle or their livestock, because they build these giant holes and the cow slips in there and it breaks its ankle or leg, and it's, you know, you lose a very expensive animal or have a really big vet bill, depending on exactly what happens. And so it was a way to actually get permission to hunt in the hunting season. So we would drive around to these farms, and we would look around, and we'd take our binoculars, and we'd glass from the car, and we would spot like a groundhog in a field. And then we'd say, where's the closest farmhouse? Oh, there it is. It's probably his farm. And we'd go to that, and we'd knock on the door and say, sir, we noticed you have some groundhogs in your field. Would it be okay if we shot them? And you usually would get, like, I wish you would. But, you know, they you know, do you know what you're doing? Are you going to shoot one? I'm like, no, we're good. And so they would tell you to go do it, and they'd usually watch you. And they'd see how you conducted yourself. And so you shoot this groundhog, and you go back to them and say, hey, we got him. If we come back through, do you want us to ask if we shoot again or whatever? And they might say, like, yeah. And then maybe if you did it one more time, like, just, hey, if you see one, I know who you are now. Just go ahead and do it. So then we would go back, like, toward the end of summer, not 2 weeks before deer season like everybody else, and say, hey, man, I was wondering, could we hunt deer here this year? Or, like, if it looked like a good place for doves, can we hunt doves here? Or can we hunt pheasants here? Or whatever. They would always say yes. And they would turn away dozens of other people who showed up the day before or the day of. But since you had built – so that was why we started shooting, right? But then I started thinking about all the ways that we treat every other animal. It's like we don't waste things. And I'm like, I wonder if they're any good. So I took one home. The first time I did it, I skinned it down to about, like, the back straps. So basically you had the back legs and the back strap, and that was it. And just tossed the rest out. And I tried cooking it. And it wasn't bad. It was just very tough. What I ended up doing, I parted it out, threw it in my grandmother's pressure cooker. I pressure cooked it for about 15 minutes to tenderize it. And then I seasoned it and threw it on the grill and browned the outside. It's kind of like a sous vide type of arrangement if you really think about it, except a much higher temperature. You know what it tastes like? Pork shoulder. Lean pork shoulder. Like the lean part of a pork is exactly what it tastes like. I always wonder why they call them ground hogs. I guess the people that ate them want this taste like pig. And I'm not going to say you should go out and hunt groundhogs for food on a daily basis. I'm saying they're edible and there's nothing wrong with the way that they taste. They do have, and I'm going to say there's several animals here. I'm not going to explain where they are and how to get them. You can look it up if you want to. They do have some glands that you should remove that can create an off taste. And whenever you remove a gland from an animal, you want to, if you were a surgeon removing a cancer tumor, they would say you want good margins. In other words, you don't want to cut into the gland. You want to take a little meat out around the gland and throw it all away in a unit. And if you do cut into the gland, you do not want that blade to touch that meat. It needs to be washed before you go back to using it, right? So groundhogs have that gland. So do beavers. Beavers, my next one. No jokes, okay? All right? But the meat of the animal called a beaver is good, and I've had it. The best way I can describe the flavor of the meat is a mild beef. It's very dark. It is quite lean. Beavers have a lot of fat, kind of like the underskin floating fat like a whitetail does. They don't have a lot of intermuscular fat. So they're best cooked kind of a low, slow stew type situation. I'll tell you what they actually taste like more than mild beef. If you've ever had black bear, they have a very similar flavor to bear meat, like a mild black bear. I imagine that if you were an idiot and you killed a young black bear cub, you know, let's say something in the 40-pound range, then it would probably taste a lot like beaver meat based on the way they taste. What they don't have is that fat has a smell and whatever, too, if you can render a tallow out of it. It's not quite as off-putting as bear tallow can be. I'll just put it that way. Next is gar. Like I said, there's a lot of fish on this. Every time I go fishing somewhere and see the rotting carcass of a gar on a bank, I want to find the person that did it and punch them right in the face. And then I want to take them by their hair and take them over to what they've killed for no good reason and rub their face in the rotting, stinking carcass that they created. It is a disgrace to me, especially when they're big. When you're looking at something like an alligator gar, and it's, you know, big, it's 100 pounds, and I've seen 100-pound gar thrown into the woods, that animal is old. It takes a long time for that animal to grow to that size. You've destroyed something because you have some weird, effed-up thing in your head, and I don't know who put it there. It is disgraceful. You've killed honest to God, when you think about it as a thing of creation, a beautiful top predator that belongs in that ecosystem because your uncle said it's a trash fish. You need to be slapped with the freaking gar, and the gar needs to go free. I don't have any problem killing it, but you don't kill things just to kill them unless they're a problem, and they're not a problem. Now, if you're doing fishery management and you have a small body of water and it's kind of overtaken with them or something like that, and you need to get them out of there, I understand that. Those are one-off exceptions. I'm here in the middle of the bell curve today, and I want to explain behind beyond that. But gar are freaking delicious. I think there's two reasons that people think they're not, at least as the origin, before it became everybody knows. One is they are a bitch to clean. But there are many videos of people cleaning them because people know that they're good to eat. The piece of meat that comes off kind of like their backstrap, which goes from their head all the way to their tail, that is freaking money. It is absolutely delicious, but because they look the way they do. I mean, they look like what they are. They're basically a living dinosaur. That's an animal that was around and doing its thing before you were like ooze in a pond somewhere in our evolutionary history. They have been around forever. Right. Maybe not quite as long as what they're, you know, the big ones are named after the alligator gar, right? It's named after the alligator. Maybe not as long as the gator, but I'm talking millions of years these fish have been swimming. And because of that, they have this very almost like a plate like skin armor and scale armor on them. And so you need the right tools to get through that skin or they're just a bitch to clean. Okay. The other reason, I think, again, is just the look. So they're hard to clean and they look not so great. Anyone who's ever cleaned one, anyone who ever looked at the flesh of one, it is clean, white, beautiful meat. It is one of the best eating fish you will ever find. Will they kill other fish? So do largemouth bass. So do flathead catfish. So do blue catfish. So do channel catfish. I mean, almost every fish that we eat eats other fish and kills other fish. So do muskies. So do pike. So do pickerel. What is the problem here? You know, it's that they're slow, they're easy to target, they're easy to catch, so people catch them, and then, oh, it's a trash fish, throw it away. Why'd you catch it? or people go out and bow hunt them. If you are bow hunting fish that you throw on the side of the bank, what are you even doing? I know if it was carp, I bet you could figure out something to do with them. Why are you killing something you're not going to eat? It's never made sense to me. I'm sorry. Now, again, I understand overpopulations. There are times for straight fisheries management. I'm in the middle of the 80% in the middle of the bell curve here. Next is a fish that, man, I'll tell you what. This is a fish that when it gets big enough, it actually becomes kind of a not really worth keeping anymore. And it's not something you should go out and target every day or whatever, but it definitely can be a really good-tasting fish if you handle it right. And it's a fish called the Jack Crevel. I almost put Amberjack on here because a lot of people think you can't eat them either, but they're a lot more accepted as a food fish, so they didn't make the cut for this list. The Jack Crevel is a member of the tuna family. It does get red bloodlines in it, and it's a very not-so-nice-tasting fat. Is what that bloodline is. But all you do is cut it off. You fillet them like any other fish, cut them out of their skin, cut the bloodlines off. This is actually maybe where the myth about soaking shark in milk came from. Another fish here later that this applies to as well. Soaking it in milk overnight in a refrigerator will help take some of the fishy flavor out of it. But what really works on it, citrus, lemon, lime, at the end. So you cut all of the red meat off of it. You throw it's a dense enough fish. It doesn't need any kind of support. You can literally just put it on a grill. Grill it, salt, pepper, whatever else you want to season with it. When you pull it off, hit it with a fresh squeeze of lemon or lime. That's all you got to do. Is it the best tasting fish you'll eat? No. Is it good? Yes. And if you don't want to eat it, let it go. It belongs in the ecosystem. It's not trash. But I've eaten a lot of Jack Crevel. And the reason I've eaten a lot of Jack Crevel is I've been out surf fishing when that's what we caught. And so what I usually do when we catch those, right in the cooler covered in ice, that's good practice, not just for sharks, for everything. Because their cut meat is also great bait. So if we're getting other higher quality fish food, maybe we'll use them for strips for shark bait or something like that. But if that's what we have, I've eaten it and there's nothing wrong with it. And just some of these fish especially, go look up catch and cook Jack Crevel. Catch and cook, you know, gaff top tail catfish on YouTube. And just go look at the people who actually did it, many of whom were skeptics. One of my favorite guys, he kind of launched his channel. Well, not launching. He kind of blew his channel up. He was one of the first person to start doing the catch, cook, and clean videos. A guy named Brant, Angler Up with Brant is his channel. He has a whole playlist of stuff like this. But Jack Crevel, nothing wrong with him. Next one, pigeons. Kind of mentioned this in the lead up. A dove is a pigeon. Okay? They're all pigeons. They're all in the same family. There are dozens of different pigeons and doves that exist. People will say they're just rats with wings. I don't know where people get their bullshit from. You know, they're nasty, they eat their own poop. Again, do you know what entropy is? No animal lives that way, right? If an animal is eating something and getting its poop, it's encrusted with food and it's starving to death, and it's probably in captivity, and it's probably the chicken you ate yesterday. All right, it's probably in your McNuggets more than it is in a pigeon. Pigeons are doves. They forage. They eat seeds and grains. Will they eat our garbage? Yes. Do I suggest that you harvest your pigeons, you know, that from the dump? No, right? Because what an animal eats does affect how it tastes to at least a degree. But if you're out in farm country or whatever, and, you know, these pigeons that live in farmers' barns, this is another thing. Like, that was the way that we also used to get permission to hunt on farms. We would see that a farm had a lot of pigeon population, and farmers really didn't want them in the barn. And we'd go out, can we shoot these pigeons? And the farmer would be like, well, you know, gun safety and all. Well, we have a couple things we could set up with shotguns and shoot them when they fly over. Or I got a really cool pellet gun and I'll sit in your barn and shoot them. And I always liked that option, right? And it was actually much more effective. And so we'd shoot a whole bunch of pigeons and show them to the farmer at the end of the day. He'd be like, well, that's great, right? And you never get them all. But you knock that population down for them. And again, when you said, can I hunt? They're like, okay, you're a known quantity. You're respectful. You don't leave garbage around. You don't show up a day before and ask. Sure, come on. So that's how it started. But again, you kill something, you might as well eat it. You can clean a pigeon exactly like you clean a dove. You pull the wings off, pull the skin off, you pull the breast out. It's just they're a bigger bird, and if they're a little bit older, they're kind of tough. So generally, we would take either tin snips or like a big knife or like a hatchet and lob the wings off on like a stump. And all we ever pulled was the breast out of them. Now that I've kept quail, I've just not killed any full-size pigeons since I've kept quail. When I started doing quail, I did what everybody else did with shears and everything, and then I was like, can you do it like you do a dove? We just pop the breast out? And the answer was yes. 15, 20 seconds. There's an old video of me processing pigeon or doves, exactly the same. You can find that video if you want to. So, but then I'm like, but the little drumstick and the thigh on a quail is worth keeping. Well, you just kind of pull back and snap the foot off. And I could process a quail with my bare hands and get your two drumstickettes, like your thigh and your thing and your breast. I can do all of that. And the little heart, save the heart. Hearts are delicious. I can do all of that in about 30 seconds a bird without being in a hurry. Pigeon takes a little longer, but it's the same process. I guarantee you can pull that thigh and leg out the way that you do. You might need a knife to cut the ball joint where it connects to the body or what have you. And you might want to use shears or something to cut the foot off because they are tougher. But there's nothing wrong with them. They're tough. A two-year-old pigeon is probably exactly as tough as a two-year-old dove. The one's just bigger. They do the same stuff. They fly around all the time. An older animal's tougher than a younger animal. That's why we like veal. Even though the whole reason veal started was so we could make cheese. I won't get into that today. It's all about how you cook it. What we used to do with pigeons, we'd take the breast, throw them in a pressure cooker for 10 minutes. That would tenderize them. And then we throw them on the grill wrapped in bacon like a dove breast. But I've cooked them, just straight up cooked them. They've been fine. What I have found with adult pigeons that makes them a little bit easier to cook and all, because they are a bit bigger of a bird, is you just take the two breast cutlets off the breast, wrap those with bacon and maybe a piece of jalapeno, brush them just like you do doves, right? Soy sauce and beer, and a little cup, a little brush, and brush, and a little Worcestershire sauce, and brush them as they cook. They're freaking delicious. There's just nothing special about them at all. Somebody's mentioned blackbirds. Blackbirds are actually pretty good, and so is crow. I didn't put those on today. I have tried both. Again, I'm not saying to eat the crows that live at the garbage dump. But if you look at what a crow eats that lives out on the farm, it eats grain. It is primarily what it eats. The next one, another fish, the bowfin. The bowfin gets a bad rap. They call them grunnell, dogfish, mudfish. I grew up in Florida. That's a mudfish. It's worthless or whatever. I caught a lot of them as a kid, and I just let them go because I like catching them. And you get some big-ass bowfins. I mean, when I was like 12, 13 years old, and you catch like a 30-inch bowfin, it puts up a fight on light tackle. It's really fun. So I just always let them go. And the thing I caught more of them on than anything else, if you're from the South, especially Southeast, you probably know what a golden shiner is. This is a bait fish, but they get really big. And they have kind of a soft flesh. And we used to catch them with just a little tiny bread ball, no weight, like a number 10 bait holder, cast out with no weight about as far as you could, and let that bait, that little piece of bread fall, and they'd hit it. And we used to cut strips out of those and fish for catfish and bowfin with them. And something about it, they loved it. They'll definitely eat a live bait fish, but they love just a strip like that thrown out. And eventually, you know, as I got older, I'm like, I wonder if they're any good. So I started looking up, found some catch, cook, and clean videos on them. I'm like, well, next time I catch them, I'm going to try it. Tastes more like walleye than anything else. And people love walleye. Again, it's one of those fish. It's not as hard as a gar, but it's a thick armor. This is a true dinosaur. The bowfin swam in swamps in North America when literal dinosaurs walked the earth, and it's still here the way that it's been fossilized. You know, we have fossilized records of it, you know, 30, 40, 50 million years ago. It's the same fish. I'm not saying to go out and target them. I'm saying they're good to eat. If you want to keep one here or there, do it, but don't throw them up in the woods. They are not a trash fish. They are a native species. I think they have been lumped in people's minds with the snakehead, which can be a problem specifically in southern waters. They do go way north, but the level they reproduce at up there and the way they affect the ecosystem is significantly lower than their impact in some southern waters where they seem to produce at a higher rate, specifically South Florida. And the thing about snakehead is it can literally go across the ground and move from one body of water to another. Bowfins don't do that. They are a native species. They've been here for longer than human beings. They belong here. The flesh is snow white. Again, it tastes more like a walleye than anything else I can think of. It doesn't taste the same, but that's the closest thing I can get. Next up, raccoon. Raccoons I started eating when I was a trapper as a kid. And it was one of those things where, again, you just don't, you catch a big coon. You know, back then, a good-sized coon pelt might be $15. But, you know, you're looking at quite a few pounds of meat. And when you look at that, you're like, and this is one, you know, I didn't have to, there were some things that I had to convince my grandfather or my dad or whatever was okay to eat. I didn't have to convince anybody of this. That was, you know, going back to my grandfather's experience during the Depression, coon's good to eat. It is somewhere between beef and pork in flavor, I guess is the way I would put it. It can be a bit tough. It is something you want to low and slow kind of cook, like a braise, or it's actually pretty good barbecued if you keep enough to keep it from drying out because it's not very fatty. Coons, again, are another animal that has most of their fat outside the muscle, not in through the muscle. They do have some glands that need to be removed. Again, you can look up how to do that. There's actually several different glands that need to be removed from them. You don't want to cut into that gland. It is nasty. But they're a great animal. I have never gone out and killed a raccoon just to eat it. But if I were trapping still for fur, I would never throw one away. That's the way I'll put it. And if I were hungry, I would kill a coon to eat if it was what was available. And I would apologize for it. And there's places where they have coon festivals and they cook coon. And we always look down at rednecks or whatever. Hey, I'm a redneck. What's your problem with rednecks? I'm a redneck hippie duck farmer, bitch. What's your problem with rednecks, right? Not all food that poor people ate is only poor people food. We just have made it that. In fact, have you noticed that a lot of poor people food, if it sounds like it could be elevated, has become elevated? Here's an example. Most people have no problem eating shrimp, okay? And I guess in my adult life, my life that I can remember, I never remember a time where people were like, ew, shrimp, right, whatever. But shrimp and grits, when I was growing up in Jacksonville, Florida, you couldn't drive by a little bridge with any of these estuaries that flowed in and out of like the saltwater parts of the St. John's River or the marshes off the oceans or whatever. You couldn't go past one without seeing somebody throwing a cast net. And often you would see people set up on the side of the road with a sign shrimp for sale with big coolers full of shrimp, and they were just netting them right there. They're as fresh as you could get. And you could buy a pound of shrimp from those guys. Now, this is head on and all, but for 75 cents a pound. Like, I'm talking in the mid-1980s, I know. It was still dirt cheap. And it was always there and it was always available. And one of the most common poor people foods, especially my family was Catholic, right? I went to Catholic school until I got myself thrown out twice. They threw me out. They talked me back in. I got myself thrown out again. And you just didn't eat meat on Fridays, okay? Certainly during Lent, but in general, you didn't eat meat on Fridays. It was a Catholic thing. Sure, it still is. But somehow shrimp are not meat, right? Fish doesn't count. And so now the whole thing where the Pope made oysters a vegetable, whatever. But fish in general, especially non-Lent, you've fasted, right? It's okay to eat lobster, but not a hamburger. Fine, whatever. So it was very popular. And one of the most popular dishes was fish and grits or shrimp and grits, either one. And today you go to these upscale restaurants, and they have shrimp and grits, and a special little sauce goes on, and shrimp are blackened, and cheesy grits and all. It was poor people food, and they've elevated. There's a lot of this kind of attitude toward food that the poor people ate in the past is being off-putting unless somebody has blessed it in some way, and then you'll accept it. I remember a person told me that, you know, they thought chicken wings were trash. Well, I guess before buffalo did its thing, that's what was in people's minds. But, I mean, you can't drive down the road, I find a Wingstop or something today. But that used to be considered poor people food. I had an elderly lady one time tell me, I was in my 40s, that chicken wings were trash. And when I said, I like chicken, you must be from the South. That mindset has no place in reality, guys. It's just bias that has no basis in fact, like most bias anyway. After raccoon, back to fish, bluefish. Man, I'm going to tell you, I've never heard fish that are good to eat trash as hard as bluefish. But this is another one based on reality. Bluefish and Jack Crevel have a very similar actual reason for the idea that they're not good to eat. They are oily fish. They need to be cooked according to that. But they also have big red bloodlines in them. And you just have to cut that shit off. That's all you have to do. And so it affects yield a little bit. But, you know, bluefish are fun to catch. When they're running, you catch them like crazy. They fight super hard. There's no danger to their population. They're a great food fish. Best way to cook bluefish, again, proper handling. Because they have that fatty red meat in them. If they are allowed to get warm as they die, that fatty stuff, as it gets up even a little bit in temperature, it almost melts. Like if you take a piece of bluefish or crevel or many of these fish with these red lines on them, and you just stick your finger, like with your body heat on that red line, and leave it there for, let's say, 2 or 3 minutes. And then you take your other finger and touch it for like 10 seconds and pull your fingers up. This one will have a little bit of an oily feel to it. This one will feel like you stuck it in butter. Because the heat of your body has begun to break that fat down. And that's what happens. That fish's body is never as warm as it is when you leave it out instead of putting it on ice properly. And so it begins to permeate the meat a little bit. Kind of like the urea thing in sharks, but not as bad. But if you process that fish in a timely manner, you take care of it, et cetera, and you cut that freaking red meat out, it is one of the best pieces of, and grilling is the way for this. This is not a fish you're really going to enjoy if you roll it up in cornmeal and deep fry it. Because now that oily greasiness can't really get out of the fish. You've trapped it. When you cook it on a grill, that oil and grease actually comes out of the fish and will usually cause a little bit of a flame kiss. That's great for catfish too, by the way. Any fish that's oily and fatty. Mackerel's good that way. Anything that'll stand up to it without falling apart on you, fantastic that way. Bluefish are a fantastic eating fish. Next, I'm going to put these two together even though I listed them separate because they pretty much taste the same and one's like an imported big version of the other. And this is another one that goes, the muskrat goes back to my trapping days. My big money crop, I guess you'd call it, my big money item as a trapper, as a kid in high school, this is after we left Florida and moved to Pennsylvania, was a muskrat. Not because they were that expensive in individual pelt, because I got really good at catching them. I could catch a lot of them, and they were a high-value pelt item. So you would get about $10 for a really nice one, and anything worth keeping was worth at least $5. But you go back to the 1980s, and you know you're bringing in 10 to 18 a day, and you got the length of the season to do that. They add up across time. So we started thinking about those. Like, are we wasting meat here? And this was another one that my granddad wasn't big on. He was never a trapper, so he didn't really know. He never really had any idea of, or never had a call to eat them, I guess you'd say. But everybody's like, well, they eat nothing but vegetation, and we know where you're getting them from. They're up in the mountains in clean water. Let's try it. Really mild, kind of like squirrel in a way, but a little bit beefy, I guess you would put it. But delicious. Again, they do have glands that need to be removed. You can look up how to do that. I doubt there's a lot of you guys, you know, killing or coming into contact with muskrats regularly. I'm just telling you, they're, you know, the word rat doesn't help, but they are a perfectly acceptable edible mammal. I've eaten them many times, and I wouldn't even think about saying no to it if somebody had probably prepared one today. Then the nutria. The nutria, of course, were brought over here with an idea that we'd be able to have a farmed version of something that would, like, stand in for beaver from a pelt standpoint. They're a lot more like a giant muskrat than they are a beaver. They're all over the South. Most places you can just kill them whenever you want to. Again, I'm back, if you're going to kill something, eat it. They are very good eating. And the closest thing they taste like is a muskrat. So I don't know what else to say about that. They also have glands that need to be removed carefully. You cut into these glands and you spread that hormone through the meat. And then you take your knife and you start parting that animal out and you're smearing that shit all over. It's no different than if you go out and shoot a buck, white-tailed during the rut. They have the, just seeping that hormone, that stink hormone, on those hot glands on their back legs. What's the first thing you do? You cut those glands off. You throw them away. And you either completely clean your knife or you use a different knife to gut the animal and do any other work on it. You don't smear that shit through the animal. It's the same thing with these glands. But, yeah, the nutria and muskrat, basically, you treat, from a food standpoint, treat a nutria like a big muskrat. They're absolutely edible. If I cooked it for you and served it to you with other side items and all, you would eat it and you wouldn't have a problem until I told you what it was. But I'm not sure this is, but this is good. Is this rabbit or, I don't know, it tastes more like, a little bit beefy, but it's more like rabbit. It's big. I don't, that's how you would be, I'm telling you. The next one, and this one does not have the bad rap that it used to. But, I mean, man, growing up, everybody knew these were bad. Now they're commercially raised in some places as a food item, and they're crossed with mallards to make a mullard duck that's a premium piece of meat, but the Muscovy duck. The Muscovy duck, when you look at it, you can see why people would think that's not good to eat. But it was one of the only domesticated fowl in North America before colonization. Natives to the Americas domesticated the turkey and the Muscovy duck. And that's pretty much the only thing, and the dog, right? They domesticated those three things. That's about all they domesticated. And the Muscovy duck is not only delicious, it's one of the most delicious things you'll ever eat. It is, you know, there's a game bird. A lot of people don't know they're a game bird, but they're a game bird. There's a season on them in certain areas anyway. And it's called the sandhill crane. And the sandhill crane is known by hunters who target it as the ribeye in the sky. I recently finally got to try sandhill crane. Chef Ken came by this spring. We had a porch day, had some friends over, and he was going to be in the area. So I said, come on by, hang out. And he had been doing a lot of processing of game, and he had obtained a half breast. And he brought it up here, and we made it on the flat top, and he didn't do anything special with it. All he did was get it really nice and dry so it would sear well, salt and pepper, and cook it on a flat top, medium. That was one of the best things I ever ate, but it tasted no different than Muscovy duck. So you have these people that are spending lots of money and traveling to go hunt sandhill crane in a very limited time, and they're so excited about the quality of the meat, the ribeye in the sky, and you can literally just have a flock of Muscovy ducks and produce your own meat. Muscovy is one of the, and it's a very dark meat. Duck in general is dark. This is darker. This tastes like, they call it ribeye in the sky. I would say baby beef. Like not a veal, but not a full-grown cow. Where the meat is not quite all the way that beefy red yet, that's what they taste like. And they're fantastic. They're easy to raise. And a shit hit the fan. There's a lot of them in a lot of places. I'll just leave it at that. Heart by Lee Murphy. And you can tell she's from Jacksonville, where I grew up, part of my growing up. It doesn't help that Muscovy's like ratty ghetto apartment bonds, though. It's true. It's true. And like, especially the Southeast, like every pond, everywhere. And it's because they're a migratory bird. So the Muscovy is native to southern Mexico and Central America. And that's where it was originally domesticated. And when I say domesticated, I mean that they tame really easily. Because they weren't really domesticated. Like now we have pure white ones that people think of as domesticated. It's just a phenotype. It's just a color type, right? They were tamed. That's what I mean by domesticated. But unless you clip their wings, they can fly. And when I say they can fly, I mean like gone, fly. So what happens is when they get to a certain population level where they're stressed for resources, some of them start flying around. And when they look, oh, there's a pond. Down they go. I would tell you, I think the only thing that keeps them from infesting Florida to the point where you're like walking on Muscovies to get across the street is turtles. Gators, sure, but turtles are murder on them. And it's any duck that has ducklings in these ponds. You'll be out, you see this mom swimming around, she's got like 20 little peeps following behind her. And if she goes in the wrong place, you start hearing bloop, bloop, bloop. And it's, you know, the red ear sliders and the painted turtles and whatever, just they grab them by the foot and take them down. It's you don't want your kids seeing it if they're little kids. Like I've had places I've been fishing ponds like she's talking about, and some guy will have little kids and they're throwing the birds bread and stuff. Get them out of here, man. Get them out of here. Anyway, Muscovy duck is delicious. Here's one that a lot of people know is good, but a lot of people don't. This is like a 50-50 thing with fishermen. Another saltwater species called the whiting. It's not really the whiting. That's what we call them. Actual whiting are a different thing. They're actually called Gulf kingfish, but they are a member of the drum family. They're a shiny silverfish. They have a bottom mouth. Again, member of the drum family. They don't get really big. Like a 2-pound whiting, you'd call that a bull whiting. I mean, that's a big one. And they get bigger, but that is a really nice fish. You often catch them in, like, we catch little bitty ones, but you often catch, like, keeper size, 12-inch, 14-inch whiting, real common. The reason people don't think they're good, I think there's a couple things at play here. One, everybody knows, right, and they've never eaten one, and they don't know, and they're so easy to catch, and you catch them so frequently, and so many people just let them go. If they were good, everybody would keep them. I think this is one of the places that the fishing YouTube influencers have done a lot of good. People like Brant, Bama Beach Bum, quite a few other people with really big fishing channels have kind of set the idea that they are good eating fish, because they are. But the other side of it, they are an incredibly delicate fish. Especially when they're small, because you have a very thin piece of meat, and people have this hyper fear of undercooking a fish, and then they go to a sushi restaurant. You're just like, man, bro, do you even understand what you're doing? Okay. So if you're going to cook whiting, it needs to be cooked very gently, very quickly, and the help off. Like literally, if you're putting it on like a hot grill, it is, you put it on there, you count about 25, you flip it and count to about 25 and take it off. And it will be cooked through. And it will be delicious, and it will still be delicate, soft. If you cook it for, like, they say, you know, 10 minutes an inch, right? So you take a half-inch thick piece of whiting, you cook it for 5 minutes, it just falls apart. It doesn't taste bad. The texture's just blah. So quick, fast, if you fry it, the only way I found to fry them, well, I'm talking, like, batter fried, you have to get all the water out of them, salt them to do that so they're nice and firm. Oil, like crappie, like 325. Bread them. Throw them in the freezer after you bread them so that it takes longer for the heat to cook through. That way you'll actually be able to get the breading crisp. They're just delicate, and it's a small piece of fish. That's the issue. And when people throw them in coolers and they have ice and the fish are directly in the ice, not in a bag, and they get waterlogged, and that ruins the consistency of them as well. Now, the other thing to do with whiting, though, that just negates this whole thing, they are one of the best ceviche fish on the planet. You're never going to overcook. I guess you could if you really tried, just how long you leave it. But you're not going to overcook a fish when you cook it with lime juice, right? And so this is not going to apply any heat to it, which is where the breakdown in the protein cohesion happens with whiting. So we take our whiting, we fillet and skin, we cut them in little bite-sized pieces, we put them in a bowl. Maybe we add some other fish that are suitable for making ceviche snappers delicious. Okay, I wouldn't use saltwater catfish. I wouldn't use any oily fish for this. Sand trout, speck trout, those are fine. Pompano, fine, right? Anything that has any instance of worm contamination, do not make ceviche with. I would never do it with like a black drum because those big ones always have worms in them. But the type of fish that would make a ceviche, put that in a bowl, a couple ounces of lime juice to mix it up with. And here's my, like, I don't have a ceviche recipe. I have things that I use in ceviche. But my favorite are avocado tidbits, cilantro, poblano peppers, and maybe a little diced tomato. That on a chip on the beach when that fish was swimming in the water 20 minutes ago. Oh, my God. That is a delicacy as far as I'm concerned with whiting. So I love whiting. I will bring some home, but mostly I use them for ceviche, and I do that fresh. The last one, nobody, well, not nobody, most people know this fish tastes good, but they're afraid to eat it. And I know I'm going to upset some people right now. There's enough people in the live stream right now. They're going to get upset when I say this. Y'all die! Calm down and wait till I'm done. Barracuda. Now, the issue with barracuda is there is a poisoning known as ciguatera, and it is an algae. And it builds up in the fish, and it can make you very, very sick. You're probably, but probably is not definitely, probably not going to die from it, but you can be very sick. And it does weird things, too, when you get poisoned with it. Like, you touch something that's hot and it feels cold, and you touch something that's cold and it feels hot. This is not something you want. Now, where does it come from? It comes from the animal. This is a predator. It's eating bait fish. The bait fish are feeding on the algae. The algae level builds up in the fish across time. This toxin is toxic to you, not the fish. Barracuda don't get sick from it. So you catch this barracuda, it smells good, it looks good. It's beautiful, glimmering, shining, healthy, bright eyes. You don't know that it's infected with this algae. Well, then why are you telling us to eat it, you stupid redneck duck farmer? Hold on. The simple rule is this builds up across time and is older fish. Do not keep barracuda for food that are larger than 36 inches. Impose your own slot limit. Perfect is about 30, 32 inches. That fish is not old enough to have become toxic to a level that this is a poison in the dose type of thing. I'm not saying to live on it, but I'm saying it's fantastic. It also has to do with where the fish comes from. There are barracuda, for instance, off the coast of North Carolina. You're not going to get ciguatera there. Why? It doesn't live there. If you get out into open ocean, not adjacent to southern waters, they don't get it there either. The ciguatera algae only lives like on the reefs and stuff like that. So it's these little bait fish are picking it off the reef, and then they eat it, and then it bioaccumulates. But do people eat grouper, snapper, kingfish, and other predators? Mm-hmm. They eat the same bait fish. They live in the same waters. But the barracuda is magically going to kill you. Well, this is what happens. Especially in like the Caribbean, there's a lot of people there that are really hungry, right? And so they go out, they catch this giant barracuda, and I don't have anything to eat tonight. And they take it home, and then they all get sick. And it's very popular with Cubans, and there's a lot of Cubans in South Florida. And some of them don't always follow the rules. And then your buddy knows the guy that lives next door that's Cuban descent, and they brought home like a 52-inch barracuda, and they ate it, and everybody got sick and ended up in the hospital. And there's the thing about this toxin that makes it a risk. You can't cook it away. It is not sensitive to heat at all, not at temperatures that we would ever cook food. Like, it would be inedible by the time you got it hot enough. You'd better incinerate it, right? So you can't cook it away. You can't detect it. But it's a risk in all predatory fish in reef systems where it is present. So that's why we don't want to eat older, larger predator fish in these ecosystems. The barracuda is not unique to this. The same rules that would apply to things like king mackerel apply to this. I know nobody ever told you that, and now you're mad at me, but it's true. Look it up. Now, how sure am I of this? So I told this to my favorite guide. I have a guide that I take out when I go out with when I go to Florida. His name is Noah. What a name for a fishing guide, right? Noah the fishing guide. And this man grew up in South Florida. He's about 10 years younger than me, so he's been at it a while. He grew up on Sanibel Island. On Sanibel Island in eighth grade, you literally get your captain's license in middle school if you want to. He did. He's been guiding fishing trips for 20 years, 25 years, something like that. He has 4 boats in his guide service. He manages one and has guys that run the others. Knows his stuff. He was the one told you can't eat him. I went and looked it up. This is years and years ago. I looked it up, and I got the guidance from the state of Florida Fisheries Department. Don't keep them over 36 inches, and you'll be fine. When I told him that, he's like, wow. Because I can't believe how many of them are, you know, used for shark bait or just thrown back with customers that want to keep fish. And because it came from an authority he respected, he accepted it. And so I'm going to tell you right now again, and that was my immediate knee-jerk reaction. Wait a minute. I can eat this grouper off this reef, but I can't eat this barracuda off the same reef that are predating on the same fish. And actually up near like the Fort Myers area, which is where Sanibel is, there is some risk of it, but it's actually much lower than if you get down into like the lower Keys and things like that. And so, you know, just be careful. Lee says it's now legal to take Goliath grouper in short season and size limited, but the same risk and taste isn't worth it. But I'll eat grouper. I eat grouper fingers all the time when I go to Florida. You also can buy barracuda, by the way, from commercial fisheries, but they all have strict geographic limits. They have a line. If the fish is harvested south of that line, it cannot be sold. Anyway, just so you know. Anyway, if there's anything that you can think of that everybody knows is terrible but is actually good, I'd love to hear from you about it. You can shoot me an email and let me know. I didn't see any questions come through, but I am one-eyed Jack by myself today, so I may have missed it. Hope you enjoyed today's show. This one kind of had like an old-school flair to it. I want to tell you how we ended up with the subject today. I put a post on Facebook, and so you can have a variety show or you can have this show. And the vote was 44-44, 88 total votes, dead split. I ran a tiebreaker. This one won, and then the tiebreaker won by quite a bit. But we're going to do a variety show on Tuesday next week again, just like we promised. Just kind of the takeaway here is some of these require a bit of extra prep and care, but nothing I gave you today is difficult or complicated. Nothing today is, you know, you have to age it for 14 days and refrigerate upside down and make a Wiccan symbol on your refrigerator and, you know, pray to the gods of fish scales or something. Like, no complicated anything here. Proper processing, knife discipline with animals that have excretions, proper treatment of meat, proper cooking. That's all that it takes. And again, I think this is a very useful topic because we never know when we're going to have to rely on natural resources ourselves. And having a false belief system that something is bad just because someone says so, I don't think that's a beneficial way to live. I think this is as important, whether you're going to never eat any of this. Understanding that something can be something everybody knows and be totally wrong, I think is valuable. We live in a society today where they have destroyed critical thinking, absolutely ruined critical thinking. Look at what we learned. How do you trust anything without verifying after COVID? Seriously. Think about just like hydroxychloroquine during COVID, right? The malicious attack at any doctor that was willing to prescribe it, whether it worked or not, doesn't make any sense if you think about it critically. It is one of the safest medications in the world. The prescription for it during COVID for people with risk was 2 tablets on day 1, 1 tablet for 5 days, quit. No one has ever been harmed by taking hydroxychloroquine that way. Nobody. The VA system gives out 60,000 pills a day of that drug. But they acted like it was a toxin because it altered their authority. It was an affront to their authority. Because if it didn't work, what was the harm of a doctor prescribing it? They prescribe it for all kinds of shit off-label all the time. But the system could not tolerate it. The system is evil, but the system exists because the method works. The concept of we say no works on us psychologically. We can do it to ourselves. We can be the monkeys enforcing our own rules in our own zoo. And that's what we mainly are in so many areas. Everybody knows this is true. It's not true. Every child should go to college. Not true. Some people are too stupid. Some people they're not right for. Right? So when people make absolute statements, you should never allow anything to be binary. It's true or it's false. There's always shades of gray in between. Like I said, if you take a Big Jack Crevel and you just fillet it and just de-skin it and leave all that red freaking meat in it, especially a big one with a lot of it, and you throw it on the grill and you cook it in a way that was actually the cooking was right, but the preparation was wrong, it will taste like shit. Okay? It absolutely will. And you'll be like, I knew it was a trash fish. But if you just have like a moderate amount of knife skill and knowledge, and I mean very modest knife skill, it is not hard to slice, right? All of a sudden it tastes good. Because it's not, that one's not binary. The whole freshwater drum are no good, that's binary. You can process it like any other fish you would ever eat, tastes just fine. The crevel is a third option. Both sides are right, depending on how it's treated. Shark, if you take a 5-foot shark, right, throw it on the deck of your boat, leave it flip around and die on the deck of the boat, or you throw it on ice but not in ice, in a cooler, and it flops around in there, or somebody chucks one in a big live well, and it dies 2 hours before you get in the shore, and then you process it, it will taste like piss. And you can soak the shit out of it in milk, and it'll make it taste less like piss, but it'll still be there. So it is true that it will taste like piss. It's also true that if you process it properly, and one of the three ways I gave you, immediately bleed out or totally encase it in ice, it will not. It will be one of the best eating things you ever had. But my question for you at the end of the day, how many other things is that true about? How many things does society present to you like the 1980s Pepsi Challenge, Pepsi or Coke? I don't know. They're both high fructose, corn syrup, shit, garbage, water with bubbles and caramel coloring. I don't want either one. There is always another option, and we always need to be seeking a third option. In fact, one of my rules in Laws of Life Book 2 is whenever I'm – actually, Laws of Life Book 1, if I'm presented with a binary choice, always seek a third option before making a decision. So hopefully this show today enlightens you to some things, but hopefully it also encourages that independent thinking. Real quick at the end of today's show, I want to remind you guys again, the AI class goes on sale the end of August. Go sign up for it if you want to be in it. This course is for people building businesses or that want to build a business and want to know how to use AI to do it. It is not really good for people to use AI in their job unless your job's marketing. Right? Or project management, maybe. Product development, maybe. But if your job is marketing, it would be really useful. In fact, several people in the last class, their employers paid for it. I had to do up, I think, five receipts for people that were able to go to their company and say, can I take this course and get reimbursed for it? And all they needed was a receipt. Hey, I'll do it. If you have a job in marketing and you work for especially like a small to mid-sized company, and you want to take this course, ask. And then you still got to get in. But again, I know it was five. I was actually surprised that it was five people this time. Email me after the fact. Can I get a receipt so I get reimbursed from work? So it's excellent for marketing and business operation because we go into both with this. Standard operating procedures and things like that within the business to make it scalable. Marketing, developing marketing plans, value ladders, product offerings. We put stuff out in the wild in it. You actually do a little bit of advertising to see what your results are. Not real expensive or anything to do. You find ways to promote your business in it. including things like what podcast to be on that matches your niche. We put a lot of thought. It's a 40-day course, $300. It is a value. This will be the fourth or fifth. I think this is the fifth round. Every time we've done it, it's sold out. The last class, you guys were the best I've had. But let's see if the next class can be even better. So go sign up for that. The other thing you might want to do, if you want to know more about AI in general, today's item of the day, you can find it at tspaz.com or thesurvivalpodcast.com, is The AI-Driven Leader by Jeff Woods. This is, of every book I've read on AI, and I've read a lot, the best, most useful, practical guide I've found. Here's the thing. It's not even about AI. It's about business, business leadership, business management, marketing. It's just how to use AI for those things. Jeff is the real deal. This guy lived and breathed this stuff. His method called the CRIT method, I found out that he actually registered the term CRIT for a corporation in 2019, when you didn't know what AI was as far as what we're looking at today. This dude slept on the floor in India where they were developing AI at Google's HQ in India. He knows his stuff. This guy is smart. And you know me, I'm tough on people. Like, he's all right, right? This guy is smart. I really hope to eventually get to interview him. I've connected with him on LinkedIn. We'll see if that goes anywhere. But yeah, this is totally worth it. And here's what you need to know about his book. He doesn't have problems like I do with Amazon, apparently. This is the second edition of the book. They just released it in June. So if you have a copy already, you might want to get the new one. Again, The AI-Driven Leader by Jeff Woods. And you can always help me out by doing any of your shopping, starting where? tspaz.com. With that, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. A little bit different. I went a little bit longer than I planned, but it was a lot of animals to talk about. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it helps you not just understand there are other options when it comes to food, but with critical thinking. And please, please stop accepting things that are supposedly true just because everyone knows. Because I would say of things everyone knows, if you leave out things like the sky is blue, right? Gravity holds shit down. If you leave out stuff like that, most things that everybody knows aren't true. Just take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with a great interview.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. Revolution.